The following message is copyrighted by Westminster Theological Seminary. Duplication, distribution, or other use of all or any part of this message is not permitted without prior written consent. Please direct your inquiries to communications@wts.edu. For all other information, please visit the main website at www.wts.edu.
Our text for this evening is the parable of the sower in Matthew chapter 13. This is a very basic parable. It's the first one that makes it seem basic. But Jesus said to his disciples in Matthew and Mark, that is, particularly in Mark, if you don't understand this parable, how can you understand any of the others? And then he explained it to them so as to be sure that they would understand this parable. Apparently, it's an easy parable to understand, and it's certainly one that almost all of us have heard, perhaps many times. And I have been thinking today and during the past week that almost all of us who have heard this many times put ourselves in the category of the good guys, the good soil, all the time. We are not the hard soil. We are not the shallow soil. We are not the soil with thorns. We are the good soil. And I was wondering, even as I was sitting up here this evening, is there anybody in this room tonight who is always the good soil? That is, whenever Jesus wants to plant a seed in your life, it always finds good soil, and it always takes root, and it always bears fruit. Now, maybe you are in that category, and if you are, I'd like to read your autobiography sometime, or you can share it with me after the service this evening. But I suspect all of us from one time or another fall into some of the categories of bad soil, and maybe some of us are locked in permanently to one of the categories of bad soil, in which case we better get out of it and change that word permanently to past tense. So let's look at this very familiar and really quite simple parable of the sower. Jesus begins in verse 3 by saying, "A sower went out to sow." Now you'll recall that the setting is that Jesus is in a boat set out from the shore of the Sea of Galilee, probably near Capernaum. There is a great amphitheater around him as the shore may curve to his left and to his right, and the mountains recede inland some miles perhaps, so there might have been a huge crowd of people as he begins to speak, and maybe even, as it was late in the afternoon, it had been a busy day, maybe even he points to a sower on a distant hill and says, "See that sower? That sower is going out to sow his seed in the late afternoon and into the evening." Now, this particular sower in the parable does not have complete success with his seed. I don't expect that by any means ever devised among men there has been any system of sowing seed that 100% produces good results. Whatever the system, modern mechanism or ancient, just scattering to the wind, you're going to lose some of the seed. And this man did not have universally good success with his sowing. Now, his system would not have been all that good by our standards. What he probably did was clear the land of thorns and weeds just by hand, going out and picking them, so that the whole field would have looked the same. And then he would have gone and scattered the seed throughout the land on what was the hard ground, all hard ground, and then later come along with a very simple kind of a tool and just scratch the surface a little bit so that the seed might be covered by a little bit of dirt. And the method by which he would have scattered the seed might have been like this. He would either have had a bag slung over his shoulders, or I think there's a famous painting of him with a bag kind of in one arm, just throwing seed right and left as he walked along, or he might have had an animal that he drove through the field with a large bag hanging over its back with holes in its back in the bag, so that the seeds would fall through those holes. Any of these methods would likely not be highly productive, and some seed would fall where he didn't want it to fall. Low production rate. Now, we need to be understanding as we go along here that we have no percentages given. We're not told that 1/4 of the seed fell here, and 1/4 there, and 1/4 there, and 1/4 somewhere else. We have no percentages at all, and it may be that almost all of the seed that he sowed was indeed productive, but we don't know that. We're told, first of all, in verse 4, that as he sowed, some seeds fell along the path, and the birds came and devoured them. That word "as" is important. It means that at the very moment that he sowed his seeds, some birds came along and ate the seeds. These seeds didn't last very long. They fell on the path. Luke says they were trodden underfoot. Maybe they fell on the path that he was walking on as he sowed. Maybe this path went down the middle of the field, and as he walked along and sowed the seed, he then walked on some of the seed inadvertently, and the birds came and devoured the seed immediately. I think the best fed segment of the population of Philadelphia is probably the Canadian geese. We have some Canadian geese that live near us, and they live on one side of the road where there's a pond. This is in an industrial park area. And on the other side of the street, the contractors or whoever it is that does this sort of thing sow seed. Well, the Canadian geese are pretty smart about that thing, and as soon as the seed is sown that day, you'll see these 50 Canadian geese walk across the street, and as far as I know, eat all the seed, and then go back to the other side of the street. They're well-fed, best-fed portion of our population. That seed doesn't last very long, as nearly as I can tell, and it hasn't produced much grass that I'm able to observe. Now, maybe eventually it will come, but that's what happened to this seed. It fell on the path. Maybe it was a path that ran around the edge of this farmer's farm, and as he got near the edge, it fell on that hard path. We're not sure. Maybe there was a road that went right through the middle of his farm, and some of the seed fell on the hard-packed ground. But at least we learned that it didn't last very long. Just as soon as it fell, the birds came and ate the seed. That's the first category. Other seed, we're told in the next verse, fell on rocky ground. I read a parable this week that I can't remember very well. It's an Arab parable, not a Christian parable. And it had to do with something about the two birds at creation went out with all of the rocks to be delivered across the earth. And one of the bags broke over Israel, over Palestine, so that half the rocks in the world are in Palestine. I don't know whether that's true, and I've never been to Palestine, but apparently it's a very rocky area. But it's apparently not true in our story that it's rocks that are in view. It's a rocky surface that we have here, apparently, just beneath the surface of dirt, so that there's a thin surface of dirt on top of this rocky shelf. And some of these seeds fall into that very thin soil where they do not have opportunity to grow much root. And so my version says, immediately they sprang up. And the Greek verb means out and up, as though they were anxious to come to life. Immediately they came to life, but they had no depth of soil. And when the sun rose, they were scorched. And since they had no root, they withered and died. They shriveled up and died. There were no roots. There were no foundations. There was no way to get energy, food, moisture into the system, into the roots, into the seed, so that the seed could germinate properly. And so they died. And then we're told in the next verse, verse 7, the third category of seeds fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked them. Now, I don't know what these thorns were. If the man carefully cleared his field of all the things that were growing there, thorn bushes and weeds, then I would guess that the thorns that we have in view here were in seed form, so that they were also in the ground along with the good seed. And as the seed that was good and the seed that was thorns grew together, the thorns grew more heartily and choked out the life of the perfectly good seed that was there. Maybe that's the case, because the thorns would have used up all of the moisture and food, and the good seed would not have grown. Maybe the thorn bushes were a fence, because in the ancient world, one of the ways that you marked the border of your farm was to grow thorn bushes around the farm. And cattle could not easily pass through the thorn bushes. People couldn't easily pass through the thorn bushes. And certainly as the farmer would have gotten near the edge of his farm, some of his seed inadvertently would have fallen among the thorn bushes. And the seed would then have died because the thorn bushes were much more hardy. But at any rate, it's clear that there were thorns in the ground where this seed fell, and the seed grew very little and died. It was choked out. All of the energy in the ground, all of the energy of moisture and food and nutrients went to the thorn bushes. A fourth group of seeds fell on good soil. Now, we know what good soil is. Good soil is soil that is not hard, like the first soil. Good soil is soil that is deep, not like the rocky soil. Good soil is soil that doesn't have thorns in it, like the third soil. Good soil is soil where seeds can grow freely and where there is plenty of nutrition for those seeds to grow. And these seeds, we read, brought forth grain, some 100-fold, some 60, and some 30. Now, we don't know what kind of grain was being sown. Some people have suggested barley, and I don't know how many seeds should occur on the end of a barley stalk, but apparently to grow 100 seeds on the end of one barley stalk is a lot of seeds. That's unusual. But some produced just 30, some 60, and some 30-fold. Jesus says at the end of verse 9, "He who has ears to hear, let him hear." Apparently, this is a very important parable, or he would not add that comment, "He who has ears to hear, let him hear." Later on, after he talks about parables in general, and we looked at that passage this morning, at verse 18, he says, "Hear then the parable of the sower." And he explains the parable to his disciples. Now, you might think, because you have seen this so often, that anyone would certainly understand what that parable meant. If you were a Jew in the first century, you would certainly understand the farming aspects of the parable. You would have understood everything that Jesus said in terms of farming. You would have understood how he sowed, how the sower sowed. You would understand the different kinds of ground. You would have understood that some of it brought forth magnificently while others of it died on the path. You would have understood all of that. But I'm not sure that if all you had was the parable that day on the side of the Sea of Galilee, if you would have understood the application that we understand so clearly because we've seen it so often, I'm not sure you would have understood that. And so Jesus is very clear to give an interpretation of this parable, which he will do only once or twice more in the New Testament, but he wants it to be clearly understood that this parable has a very basic message that everyone should understand. And so he says to his disciples in verse 18, "Hear then the parable of the sower." And here is the first case. "When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what is sown in the heart. This is what was sown along the path." Now, I am not sure that the birds in verse 4 are to be understood as Satan in verse 19. Maybe that's true. Or maybe Jesus is simply saying in the parable that when a seed falls on hard ground, it doesn't last very long. Something happens to it. For example, birds come and take it away. And then Jesus is saying in his explanation, when the word of God is preached, when the word of the kingdom is preached and it falls on hard ears, it doesn't last very long. Something comes and takes it away. Satan, for example. But I'm not sure we have to understand that the birds and Satan are a one-on-one comparison. If we do that, then we're beginning to look at an allegory instead of a parable, and that's not entirely wrong. And I talked a little bit about allegories this morning and how they differ from parables. But at any rate, it's clear what the parable means. Jesus says that the seed that falls on the hard ground, the path, the cement out in front of the church, the seed that falls on that cement is very much like the word of the kingdom that falls on the ear of somebody whose ear is very much like that cement. And Satan will come, and we're indicated here, it's indicated to us, and he will immediately snatch it away. That person may have a very hardened exterior to the gospel. They may be a very smooth person, very smooth, smooth and hard, very suave, very cultured, very conscious of their culture and their education and their background and their achievements, but very hard to the gospel. And they may sit under the hearing of the gospel regularly or often, but the seed comes constantly and it just gets to their ear, no further. It doesn't get even in the ear. And Satan comes and picks the seed out. It's a situation similar to that of Jesus preaching one day, and you may recall his preaching experience when he was preaching about the love of God and the mercy of God. And right out of the middle of the congregation that day, a man blurted, "Master, bid my brother divide the inheritance with me." Now, you've all been in that situation, haven't you? Or maybe you haven't. Maybe you never have. Maybe when someone is preaching, you're always thinking about what the preacher is speaking about. Or maybe sometimes you aren't, and you're thinking about something else, dinner, or the Heat, or the Phillies, and they could have beaten the Pirates 4 times, but they should have beaten the Mets 3 times, and that, you know, you're thinking about anything else, and so at that moment, at least, your heart is hard, and your ear is hard, and there's no way to get past that, because your mind is somewhere else. Master, bid my brother divide the inheritance with me. Jesus wasn't talking about inheritances. It's just that that man was focused on inheritances, something else. And his heart and his ear were very hard against the word of Jesus. Now, in the case of Jesus, now I'm certainly not speaking in the case of myself or in the case of Jim Boyce or any other human being that I know about, but in the case of Jesus, at least, there was no problem with the seed. It was a good seed that Jesus was sowing. It was the word of the kingdom. That's what Jesus calls it in verse 19. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom, it was a good seed, perfectly good seed. And the sower was Jesus, the best sower, the perfect sower. And there was no fault in his sowing, not Jesus' sowing. He sowed the word in love and concern and mercy and grace, and he backed it up with his own life. So there's no fault in the seed or the sower or the sowing. The entire fault was in the soil. The entire fault was in the reception. The entire fault was in the receiver. I have to be very careful, and I hope you understand what I'm saying. I may be preaching poorly. I may not be representing the message of God carefully. But the seed is good. The seed of the New Testament is good. The seed of the message of the kingdom is good. The seed of the gospel is good. Now, it may be poorly represented by us human beings, but the seed is good. And sometimes it falls on hard soil. Sometimes it falls on soil that's always hard. Never responded. Other times it falls on soil that's sometimes hard. How many sermons have you listened to? And maybe were quite useful sermons, quite useful messages, and your conclusion was that was a good sermon or that was not a good sermon. That's how it affected you. The message was irrelevant. If somebody asked you, well, what did he say? You'd say, well, I don't know. I really can't remember. But it was good. Or it wasn't good. But the message just never penetrated, whatever it was. And the fault may not have been with the preacher. Now, it may have been, but it may not have been with the preacher. The fault may have been with the hard soil. And I think at least some of us, from time to time, have that hard soil problem. Maybe you never do, but I know that I do. The second case is given in verse 20. Jesus says, as for what was sown on rocky ground, this is he who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy. And yet he has no root in himself, but he endures for a while. And when tribulation or persecution arise on account of the word, he falls away. He falls away. Very thin soil. So the seed falls into his life or her life. And right away, he or she says, wow, that's wonderful. Do you know what he said tonight? Do you know what I read in the Bible? Boy, is that great. I want to tell somebody about that. And that whole experience lasts 10 minutes. Or maybe till tomorrow morning. Or maybe a week and then it's all gone. Totally gone. Or maybe somebody hears the gospel and says, that's tremendous. You mean Jesus Christ died for me? You mean I'm a sinner and I'm deserving to go to hell and Jesus Christ died to give me eternal life? Boy, that is tremendous. That's wonderful. I've never heard anything like that. And you're all excited and enthused, and you can't wait to learn a gospel hymn so you can sing it. And the whole thing lasts maybe 10 minutes or 30 minutes or till the next morning. And it's gone. Because it wasn't real in the first place. It wasn't real in the first place. And what comes along to choke it out is tribulation. That's the word that's used here. That word means a pressing together. You have this experience and you're filled with joy, and then the pressure comes, a little bit of pressure the next day or the next week, and it's all gone. It just gets crushed. Tribulation or persecution come because of the word, and immediately he falls away. And this person isn't much better off than the first person. As I read verses 20 and 21 in my version, I see the word immediately. He receives it with joy. He endures for a while. Every word indicates how short the experience is, and then immediately he falls away. because his experience is so shallow. Does he remind us of the man who came to Jesus and said, Jesus, I would like to be your disciple. I want to follow you. I will go wherever you want me to go. And Jesus says, the foxes have holes and the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. And that's the last that I recall we hear of that man. Tremendous experience, filled with enthusiasm. Jesus, I'll follow you wherever you want to go. And so Jesus tells him where he's going to go. And as far as we know, he says, well, not there. I'd just soon back off at this point. Now, there's nothing wrong with having joy in the Christian experience, in spite of the way some of us represent the gospel. There's nothing wrong with having joy in the Christian experience. But if all there is joy, if all there is froth, there's something wrong. And undergirding that joy, there needs to be deep-rooted experience in the Lord Jesus Christ. And some people have only a very shallow experience, not a genuine experience. And so when tribulation comes, they get crushed and they fade away. There is a third group of people, and maybe sometimes you fall into this category, or maybe you never do, because you're always in the fourth category. As for what was sown among thorns, this is he who hears the word, but the cares of the world and the delight in riches choke the word, and it proves unfruitful. Mark adds a third category, three things: the cares of the world, the delight in riches, and the desire for other things. So this is the person now into whom the word falls. I preach the word. If I do it and the Lord blesses it in some way, it falls into your life. And the seed begins to take a little bit of root. And then it gets choked out. The thorns start to grow. What are the thorns? Well, you can see them, the cares of the world. The word cares means division. You are divided in your loyalty. You begin to think you're hearing the gospel, but then the cares of the world crowd in and you're divided, and the cares of the world choke out the gospel, which just barely began in your life. Now, some people think cares of the world is the besetting problem of the poor people in the world. And they think the next thing, delight in riches, is the besetting sin of the rich people in the world. And I don't really think that's true. I think that there are many poor people who delight in riches. They wish they had them. And they think, if I only had riches, everything would be all right. So they're really delighting in riches. Unfortunately, they don't have it. But there are rich people who are delighting in riches who realize that that's not the answer to all of their problems. And they're burdened with the cares of the world. They need more and more money, so they think, and they never have enough to be satisfied. So I'm not sure that you can say one of these is the concern of the poor and the other of the rich. I think all of us are in danger of being entrapped by the cares of the world and the delight in riches, which can choke out the word. And the word then becomes meaningless in our lives. Then we come to the fourth soil. As for what was sown on good soil. Now, what is good soil again? Good soil is soil that can be penetrated. That is, it's not hard. Good soil is soil that's deep. There's not something right below the surface that's commanding all the attention of the person, the thorns of the world. Good soil is soil that's not concerned with many other things, but concerned with the growth of the seed. The cares of the world and delight in riches are not critical issues. It's the growth of the seed that's critical. That's good soil. As for that which was sown on good soil, this is he who hears the word and understands it. He indeed bears fruit and yields. In one case, 100-fold, in another 60, and in another 30. And there's a lot of sowing going on. There was in ancient Israel, all over the place, people were sowing. I suspect it was like modern Korea. One of the things that struck me about modern Korea is any place there was a square foot of ground, somebody was sowing rice, usually. Any place at all, little 1 foot square plots of ground, a rice field. Sowing everywhere was going on in Israel. Sowing everywhere is going on in modern Israel. It's going on all over the world. It's going on today in churches, sowing. God is sowing his word. I hope that God has been sowing his word here today, hopefully this morning, this evening, next week, next month, next year, as long as he gives this church an experience in his kingdom, until he comes again. There is sowing going on all over. But the parable tells us that not all of the seed is falling into good ground. And maybe at least on occasion, some of us represent ground that isn't good. A lack of understanding, that's hard ground. A superficial experience, that's shallow ground. Impurity of desire and mind and thought, the thorns, that's that kind of ground. There are all kinds of hindrances to the growth of the seed in our lives. No understanding, or procrastination, or tribulation, or distress, or difficulty. All of these things come into our lives and choke out the perfectly good seed that God wants to plant in our lives. Now, the word of Jesus came to very many people. You will recall in chapter 12, there was a sharp division between the disciples of Jesus and the people who wanted to kill him. And there were only two groups. Either you were his disciple or you wanted him dead. That's the way it came out at the end. You either believed in him or you said, let's kill him. Only those two groups. I wish there were a middle ground so that we could sort of spread ourselves all over. But there are only two grounds. You're either Jesus' disciple or you're against him. That's the New Testament message. And in this first parable, Jesus seems to make clear that there are people who somehow manage, by one means or another, to deny the gospel. They either don't receive it at all, or they receive it in a very superficial way, and life chokes it out. They can't stand the heat. And the sun comes up and just scorches the earth, and the seed dies because it has no moisture, no deep soil, or the thorns of life are choking it out. And so what Jesus wants from us is to be good soil. And I think the question that it's fair to ask each one of us this evening is whether or not you and I are good soil. How do you answer that question? It's easy. Fruit. That's easy. You just say to yourself, what is the fruit in my life? It's as simple as that. You don't have to talk about the ground. You don't have to talk about stalks and how grain grows. You just have to look in your life and say, what fruit is there in my life? Now, you know what kind of fruit Jesus is looking for in the New Testament. He's looking for the seed of Jesus Christ to be planted in your life so that eventually your life will look like his and another seed will grow. You, and you look like Jesus. That's fruit. Jesus is looking for fruit in your life where you will express the love of Jesus Christ to other people. He's looking for fruit. Jesus is looking for you to share the gospel with other people. That's fruit. Jesus is looking for your attitudes and your behavior and your way of life to resemble the gospel. That's fruit. You know, the whole New Testament talks about fruit. And if you want to know if you're good soil, you just have to ask the question, is there good fruit in my life? You don't even have to ask how much, because Jesus says sometimes there's 30-fold and sometimes 60 and sometimes 100. Some people bring forth some fruit and some bring forth more and some bring forth a lot of fruit. All you have to ask is there any fruit and what kind of fruit is it? Is it good fruit? You see, there's a process here that is inevitable if the soil is good. And the process begins with hearing, first of all, and then it moves to understanding, and then it moves to growth, and then it moves to maturity, and then it moves to fruit. It's just a simple process. You can draw arrows from one to the other. Understanding comes after hearing. Hearing, understanding, growth, maturity, and fruit. And so I would ask you this evening, which I think is a reasonable question for you also to ask me, what fruit is there in your life? Or have you been for too long, or too often, though you're a Christian, have you been for too long or too often hard soil? The message just bangs off you, clangs off your ears as though there were cymbals on the outside of your ears. Or the rocky ground, you're the rocky ground and just a thin superficial experience and Jesus just can't penetrate into your life, though he'd like to. Or you've got so many other things on your mind, the cares of the world and the delight in riches and the goals that you have for your life in those areas, or the desire for other things, and the word just can't grow. You've been too long or too often in those categories, and even though you're a Christian, and even though really you are good soil, there surely isn't much fruit, because too often you're in these other categories. I want to close by reading a verse from Jeremiah chapter 17. And if you have a Bible with you, you just might turn to it. We're going to close with this verse, Jeremiah chapter 17. Let me read a couple of verses. Just take me a minute and I'll be done. Jeremiah 17, beginning at verse 5. Thus says the Lord, Jeremiah 17, 5. Cursed is the man who trusts in man and makes flesh his arm, whose heart turns away from the Lord. He is like a shrub in the desert and shall not see any good come. He shall dwell in the parched places of the wilderness in an uninhabited salt land. That's these next two verses. Blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord, whose trust is in the Lord. Now mark the next verse and think about it a little bit. He is like a tree planted by water that sends out its roots by the stream and does not fear when heat comes, for its leaves remain green and is not anxious in the year of drought, for it does not cease to bear fruit. Isn't that a wonderful commentary on the parable of the sower? He is like a tree planted by water that sends out its roots by the stream and does not fear when heat comes, for its leaves remain green and is not anxious in the year of drought, for it does not cease to bear fruit. So the question is, what kind of soil are you? Hard soil just cannot penetrate. Maybe you've never been penetrated by the gospel. Suave, sophisticated, hard, like the cement outside? Or are you like that from time to time, even though you're a Christian? Or are you like the soil that's so shallow, and Jesus may get the seed in just a little bit, but it immediately springs up and dies, and you get on with other things? Or are you like the thorny soil? And yes, you hear the message, and it lasts for a little bit, but the thorns, the cares of this world, and the delight of riches, and the desire for other things just chokes out the growing seed, and it dies. Or are you good soil? Good soil meaning none of the above, in which Jesus is bringing someone to maturity through growth, and that someone is you, and you're bearing fruit, which is the ultimate evidence that the seed is growing in your life. What kind of soil are you? Let's bow together for prayer.